Good morning. Mr. Smolowitz asked that his father-in-law having an operation this morning. I hope that it goes well. Shalom and Rafuah Shleima, but are learning to be on the Mizrachos of Yehuda ben Nechama. So without further ado, let's do the learning. Before we get to today's scenario, I have a few comments about the garbage can being a basis that we were discussing yesterday. So the first thing is that I was checking last night, and I saw that Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Or, the Pesach of Mattersdorf, so he writes that in his view, even like plastic cups, plastic forks and spoons are not muktzah even after you throw them in the garbage, he says. It's basically the same. If you throw a metal fork in the garbage, right, you would take it out, right? If your baby throws your cell phone right into the garbage, you would take it out. That happened yesterday in my house, right? So it doesn't become muktzah just because it gets thrown in the garbage. So he says the same thing is also like plastic fork. If you throw it in the garbage, so it doesn't become muksa. So then he gives a very interesting reason why. He says, imagine that for some reason you couldn't find any of the forks in your house, and you wanted to eat something, and you open up the garbage, right? Because you know that there's usually plastic forks in the garbage. You take out a plastic fork, you wash it off, and you use it to eat, he says. So therefore, even after you've thrown the plastic fork in the garbage, you have not cast it away and written it off, but the plastic fork you certainly would recycle if the need arose, and the only reason that we're not recycling it is because we're spoiled and we have such an abundance. But theoretically, if we were to need such a fork, we would take it out of the garbage and wash it off. So I started a quick poll, and I'd like to continue the poll over here. I asked my wife, I said, what happens if you were very thirsty and there were no clean cups around, right, and no reusable cups around, and the only cups that were around were plastic cups that had been thrown in the garbage, would you open up the garbage and rinse out the plastic cup in order to take a drink? As a bottle already counts, that is a cup. Let's say it's only tap water. Right? By raising hands, who would open up the garbage and rinse out a plastic cup? But the question is, everyone reuses plastic cups. That's my assumption. At any given time, there's probably 10 or 20 plastic cups lying around the house. If a kid wants a drink, we just grab the nearest plastic cup and we pour him a drink. It's been used. It's going to be used again. That's not the issue. The issue is, once it's in the garbage, would someone take it out, rinse it, and then use it again? Right? If you reuse it out of the garbage, for sure, everybody agrees that it's not considered garbage. Even after you finish your meal, right? And this is a big shiloh in the postkin. You finish your meal, right? And now you've got this soiled plastic silverware, plastic cutlery, that you're never going to reuse. So there are some postkin who go so far as to say, well, it's muksa on your table. Because Adam Zarkon of Gibbina Gutais, if a sewing needle broke in half on your table, it would be muktzah and you wouldn't be allowed to use it. So this plastic fork, which now is no longer usable, you said Birkat HaMazon, you're not going to use it again for anything. Some folks can say it's muktzah on your table. Right? And then the only heter for carrying it away is grass already. It's disgusting, so you can take it out of your sight. But but for sure in the garbage. Okay, so some people maybe, if you have another piece of chicken or whatever it is, and you're a little bit hungry, like an hour later, and it's still fork still on the table, so there's a chance you'll use it. But taking it out of the garbage is already a different madriga. And so it looks like he's got like about what percent? 15% So I have, we have to consider again. This seems to confirm at least partially Rav Scheinberg's hypothesis that these disposable cutleries are not necessarily something that everybody writes off. There is a segment of society that would take it out of the garbage. Maybe the more controversial element, as he says, that because if you had nothing in your house, you would take it out of the garbage. Therefore, all of us who do have extra cutlery in our house, it's not mukta either. I don't know if there's anybody, right, in the last 50 years who has needed to take plastic cutlery out of the garbage because they were lacking for eating utensils. That might be a little bit more controversial, but this is the argument of Rav Scheinberg. Rav Scheinberg basically says that as long as you have in your garbage pail some plastic, you know, utensils before Shabbos, the whole thing is a bus. And you wouldn't have to take your garbage out right before Bein HaShmashos. But as I said before, many, many poskim argue on this for some of the reasons we articulated. Yes?
I have two questions. What would a person use a needle, meaning with a hole, on Shabbos in the first place?
So take out a splinter.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah. What would you
do? It's the Gemara Kasha. It's the Gemara Kasha. Yeah, so again, at the end of the day, the Gemara says that if it's something that's usable, right, but nobody uses it, everybody just throws it out, and it's broken, so then it for sure becomes muktzah. The second point that I saw in the Art School Mukta book was, what do you do when your garbage pail is connected to a cabinet door? In other words, you need to pull out the cabinet door in order to get to the garbage pail, and that poses a special problem because the garbage and the cabinet door as well become a basis, right? The davar ha'asur. Again, assuming that there are items in the trash from before Shabbos. So the Art School book suggests that what you do is you put an extra garbage bag. On the cabinet door. So now the cabinet door is a basis not only for the full garbage bag that has garbage in it, right, but it's also a basis for the empty garbage bag, which is a davar hamotar. And therefore, as a basis for davar ha'asar u the davar hamotar, it's going to be allowed. Now that works very, very beautifully for a cabinet door, because the cabinet door is not built, designed, manufactured for the purpose of supporting trash. And therefore, if it's got trash and a trash bag, so it could be a basis for the bag, right, which is more worthwhile, which is worth more than the trash. Yes. So maybe depending on the model, right, of cabinet door that you use, if it's a special garbage can rolling door or something like that, so then it might be considered designed exclusively for the trash. You have to consider also, is it that are the wooden panels, right, that all of the hinges and stuff are attached to, are those generic, right, or are those also, do they have to be custom manufactured? Right, so that's why I would say that the actual wooden piece of the door, right, that was probably manufactured generically, and then it only became a garbage can door when they added on that contraption to it. So that's why I would say that it's possible that the cabinet door, right, it could become a basis for the garbage bag. The bigger shaila that Mr. Petrushka raised yesterday is, what about like a regular garbage pail? So now I have a regular garbage pail, and I have inside of it a full garbage bag, and an empty garbage bag, not double bagged, but the empty garbage bag is folded over, so that way it'll be ready to replace the full garbage bag when it's done. So that's where I have a shaila. Even though the empty garbage bag is worth 10 cents, the full garbage bag is not worth anything, and so usually we determine what is this pail a basis for based on value. However, in this case, the garbage pail, right, this argument goes both ways. The garbage pail is meant for garbage. Right? It's called a garbage pail and not a garbage bag pail. Right? So you could make the argument that therefore it's a buses for the garbage, in spite of the fact that there's also the bag, the davar hamutar, that's together with the garbage pail, because it's not a garbage bag pail, it's a garbage pail. On the other hand, you can make the opposite argument as well. You could say, really, it is a garbage bag pail because the pail is meant to be used with garbage bags, and therefore garbage bags are what naturally goes in the pail, what always goes in the pail, what's expected, right, to go in the pail, and therefore they have as much status, as much claim on the pail's support as the actual garbage does. Right, then you can make the opposite argument. Maybe it's only for full bags and not, you know, for empty bags. So that, I think, you know, is an argument that can cut both ways. And Mr. Petrushka said that Rabbi Welcher is matir, moving garbage pails even if they were full during Bein Hashmashos, as long as there is a second empty garbage bag in the pail. It'll be hard though to take out the trash on Shabbos because the full garbage bag, right, is going to be a problem of a buses. So you might want to just make sure there's enough room in the garbage pail over Shabbos. Another thing that I'm wondering how Rabbi Welcher takes care of is doesn't the full garbage bag make the empty garbage bag into a buses? Meaning in my garbage pail. So in order for the garbage bag to be firmly in the garbage pail, I stretch it over the rim, right, of the pail, which means that the garbage bag is effectively resting, right, on anything else which is resting on the rim of the garbage pail. So if I put a empty garbage bag over the rim, and then I spread out the full garbage bag, so now the full garbage bag is resting not only on the pail, but also on the empty garbage bag. And that, again, you would think should make the empty garbage bag into a buses and the pail into a direct buses and the buses of a buses. It doesn't make a difference, right? But so that also, I'm wondering, I need to ask Rabbi Welcher how that leniency works. But again, these are two different things. Rav Scheinberg says as long as there's any sort of disposable, the entire garbage pail is a buses ledavar hamutar, because you would take it out and reuse it and rinse it off, right, if you didn't have anything else. And then you have, you know, Rabbi Welcher's heter, which is if you just put a garbage bag in the garbage pail, at least if I understood Mr. Petrushka properly, that you just sort of take the garbage bag and put it in the garbage pail, and now the garbage pail becomes a basis lidavar hamotar. I think that we are somewhat short on papers today, but take this one. Thank you. There's one over here. So let's take a look at our next scenario over here. This actually was suggested by...
so much that gets thrown out that there is good food in there, right? There's a piece, you throw out a bone, there's pieces of chicken on there. Mm-hmm. Why not? The cat is definitely usable. Not on my bone.
The older poskim, right, before we lived in our age of plenty and of waste, right, so they definitely write that if there's food which is still edible, right, it's not, doesn't become mukta. However, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that perhaps we need to update this, right, in light of socio-cultural changes that took place, right, you know, in especially right, after the war and as we enter this age of plenty. He says that in the olden days it used to be that you would recycle edible food. So in other words, if somebody threw out right, half a peach right into the garbage pail, so you might take that half a peach out and eat it, assuming that it isn't too badly soiled. So that's an interesting question. Like, would a homeless person take it out? He would. And are there homeless people that roam the neighborhood and take food out of garbage pails?
They take bottles.
They take bottles. Okay, I'm confident then to say, right, that if you put a bottle, right, that has a return deposit for it into the garbage, you should put it into recycling, right? But if you put it into your regular garbage, It's something that you could get a deposit for at a supermarket. So then the entire garbage would for sure be mutter. Right? So there are homeless people. There are homeless people who go through the trash, right, and take these bottles out. If one of them knocked on your door, I'm sure you would be happy to let him come into your kitchen, right,
and clean it out.
Mm-hmm, right, exactly. Even to go through your garbage pail. And as a result, therefore, these bottles would not be considered mukta, because these are things that actually are, practically speaking, like on our own streets, they are things that are recycled even once they're in the garbage. When it comes... No. It's not valuable in and of itself. It's only valuable to mukta machmas gufo.
Everything is valuable. You can sell anything on eBay.
But the bottle does also have an inherent utility, as opposed to a coin, which doesn't. Would the homeless person rinse it? That's the question. We have to ask.
He probably has it.
They don't have a collection, so it's space efficient. They put it in a giant bag, so they can carry as many as they can. They're not using it for any utensil. We would use it maybe. But for as far as the ones collecting, they're just doing it for the nickel, and they want to be as efficient as possible.
The question is whether all homeless people are that efficient.
Nothing is visible. They just need to scan that part.
I've seen plenty of homeless people with gigantic bags full of uncrushed bottles. Right, no, that's definitely true. But the fact that they take it out, right, and they preserve it intact, right, means that maybe, like, they would recycle it if they needed something to drink from. So I think that's a question that we need to refer to the local homeless people, whether they would actually drink from some of these bottles that they take out of the garbage. It definitely makes things a lot better if they would be willing to drink from them. And I think that it's also safe, right, especially in light of the fact that Rav Steinberg says that even we would drink from these bottles if we needed to. So I think it's certainly safe to say that the homeless people would drink from these bottles if they needed to. So I think that we could for sure say that the plastic bottles that are recyclable, you know, that you get the deposit for, that those are for sure not mukta, and that those would rescue the entire garbage can and the entire garbage bag from being a basis on the davar ha'asur. So that's the only shaila is that they belong in recycling. So, you know, maybe they're not. That you have to know. But that definitely would rescue it. You had a different point also. The food, right? The food, though, again, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach expresses a lot of hesitancy, because nowadays people just don't take food out of the garbage. Now, it happens to be that when I asked my wife, you know, what she would do if she was out of cups and would she reuse this plastic cup, she actually said, it depends on how dirty the cup was, right, and what was on top of it and stuff like that. So in other words, a cup that has, you know, dried out, you know, orange juice from, you know, 5 days ago, right, and is sitting, you know, underneath a pile of chicken bones, probably not, right? But a cup that was just used for water, right, and is sitting atop a pile of other things that are relatively similarly clean, right, that might be something that one would take out, you know, and recycle if one was out of cups entirely. So I guess that, you know, based on that, which I think is a pretty normal and representative response, then if you look at your garbage bag on Erev Shabbos and you see that in your garbage bag there's some clean plastic cup or something, right, which is not yet soiled by garbage going on top of it, so then theoretically there will be more ground to not consider that garbage can a basis, as opposed to if everything is really very, very soiled and there's dirty stuff, you know, on top of all the stuff that you might even consider recycling, so then it will be a little bit more difficult to consider the garbage can mutter. Again, the fail-safe is just to move the garbage can sorry, to take out the garbage before candlelighting, before being ashmashos. But if one didn't, then these are all factors to consider. Right? Rav Scheinberg's leniency, the second garbage bag, and based on Rav Scheinberg's leniency, there might be room to differentiate between disposables that have already gotten soiled by other garbage on top of them, and disposables that still remain relatively clean. Even the clean cup, you're still relying on Rav Scheinberg. What you would really have to do is that you would have to store a plastic cup in the garbage pail, and take it out and rinse it during the week also, and if you do that during the week, so then if you have that there during Bein Hashmashos, then it's fine because you have already demonstrated that that this is kind of not considered to be garbage for you. But then you get into the other problem. Why can't I just store a knife? Why can't I put a metal knife underneath the garbage bag, even just in the floor of the garbage pail? Right? And now, the metal knife doesn't become garbage. So the garbage pail is a basis now for the knife, and therefore, it's a basis ladavra hamutar in addition to basis ladavra asar, and everything is fine. So the reason that doesn't work, is because the garbage pail is not meant for metal knives. It's meant for garbage, and therefore it's going to become a basis for the thing that it's meant to serve and not for the thing it's not meant to serve. So if you kind of do this trick and you put a plastic cup there every day during the week and also on Bein Hashmashos, so I wonder whether that plastic cup becomes basically like the metal knife. This would work really nicely though if there's somebody in your household who just kind of throws out plastic cups. And you, instead of taking a new one out of the cabinet, so you can just go to the garbage. So now you're not, making the, this a bus, this whatever it is. In your household, this is actually real garbage. But, since you're a recycling type of person, you take it out of the garbage and you rinse it out and you use it. And that would certainly not, turn it, then the garbage pail is meant for it because everyone else in the house throws out their plastic cups. Right? But at the same time, you have demonstrated that you're willing to recycle, in this type of radical way. And you should probably send a letter to the mayor also, because I think he would be very, very proud of everybody who participated in this type of recycling. So, that would actually be a good campaign gimmick, right? What's his name, who slept in that apartment in Newark when he was rerunning Cory Booker. Yeah. Right? He went and he slept in that apartment, a public housing apartment when he was running for mayor. Right. So here, this could be a whole gimmick that he's taking the plastic cups out of the garbage. Right. Okay. Let's take a look. So the next scenario over here is the guests have been 5 minutes and the main course is still not yet out. When you go to investigate, you discover that all the right-sized serving dishes are in the dishwasher, which you can't open because it'll make a light go off. But wait, in your break front, you have on display an antique, gold-plated, expensive serving dish. In other words, that should be setting the alarm bells ringing. That is Mukta Machmas Chesron Kis, right? Or perhaps it's Mukta Machmas Chesron Kis. It's just the right size. So are you allowed to use it for the main course, right, or not? Now, short answer is, yes, you are. Right? Now the question is, why are you allowed to? Is this unanimous? Is there anybody who disagrees? Right? What is the logic behind it? So in order to see that, we have to take a look quickly at the next Gemara. That's Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. And actually at the Mishnah, the second Mishnah on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kola Kalim Nitalin. You can move around anything which is a kli. Again, definition of a kli, something that's useful, reusable, highly processed. has a base kibble, that there's a couple of different factors, each one which makes something into more of a kli, chutz, except min ha-meser ha-gadol, the yaseid shel macharesha. Meser ha-gadol is like a big saw, and the yaseid shel macharesha was that in the olden days when they were plowing, they had a very, very big blade, right, that they would attach to a horse, and one person would drive the horse, the second person would lean on the blade, and the blade would cut a furrow, right, through the hard earth. And so that is the yaseid shel macharesha, that big blade that cuts the furrow when you lean on it, that is the yaseid shel macharesha, and these are two examples of things that are muktza, machmas, chesro, and kis. The saw, you can't use it on Shabbos, and even if you could, you would only use it for its permit, you know, for its designated purpose, which is asr on Shabbos. The yaseid shel macharesha, and again, you only use it for its designated purpose, and its designated purpose is not, is not able to be done on Shabbos. Rav Nachman gives a couple of other examples. Amar Rav Nachman in the Gemara, Hai Uchla de Katsvi, this sort of implement that the launderers use, it's some sort of like a colander which they use for sprinkling or steaming clothing. So this Uchla de Katsvi is Ki Yaseid Shel Macharesha Dami. It's also something whose use is forbidden ordinarily on Shabbos, and then you would never use it for anything else. Therefore, it is Muktza Machmas Chesron Kis. Amar Abaye, Abaye gives the fourth example, Charba du'ushkafi, and Sakina da'ashkafta, and Chatzina de'nagri, four, five, and six, Ki yaseid shel macharesha dami, these three things are also considered to be muksa, machmas, chesron, kis. So the Charba du'ushkafi, right, a cherev, right, is a sword or a knife or a dagger of some sort, and ushkafi are shoemakers. Remember that, I'll tell you why in a second. The Chatzina de'nagri, we said that the Nagar is the blacksmith, the locksmith. And the Chatzina is also some sort of an implement that the locksmith uses, right, for putting locks right onto the doors. Again, presumably, it's ordinarily used for boneh, right, and he wouldn't use it for anything else, so it's mukta machmas chesron kis. The question is, what is this sakina de ashkafta? Again, a sakina is some sort of a knife, and what are these ashkaftas? So if you look at the top tosfos, on the amud, top right-hand side of the page, tosfos say, sakina de ashkafta, this knife, Pirish Bekuntris, Rashi says, Sakin Shakatsovim Mikatsvin Ba Basar. It's a knife which butchers use for cutting raw meat. However, Tosfos themselves say, Yesh Mefarshim Sakin Sheshochtin Ba. It is a Shochet's knife. Now, Shochet's knife fits very nicely with the other five examples. All the five examples are objects which you only use for one thing, and that thing that you use it for is forbidden to do on Shabbos. The question becomes, what about Rashi's interpretation of Sakina d'ashkafta? Rashi seems to indicate that it's a butcher's cleaver, right, which is something whose ordinary use is permitted on Shabbos.
You're not allowed to cut meat with a cleaver. Raw meat?
Not raw meat.
Ah. Even raw meat.
Not on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur. What's the reason
that you will cut raw meat on Shabbos? Sushi.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm still fish. You're from an old school.
Anything which is not
dead, I don't eat.
I thought it was very cute that in the Art Scroll Muktzah book,
yeah.
So it's now it betrays itself as dated. Because it paskins that raw fish is categorically muktza, and so in the margin of my Art Scroll muktza book, I wrote sushi! ! So these things do change. I'm pretty sure that years ago my Rebbe and Chavrusa, Rabbi Natal Wiederblank, was giving a shiur on Hilchos Muktzah, and he said that he actually telephoned to many restaurants around the tri-state area asking them whether they serve any dishes that call for raw meat. Because apparently there are certain upscale dishes that where raw meat is actually the main ingredient.
Steak tartare.
Okay, yeah. So there you go. So he said he actually found
raw ground meat. with a lot of mustard.
Okay, excellent. Steak tartare. He said, and he found two kosher restaurants in New York City that actually do have steak tartare on their menu. And on the basis of that, he said that that raw meat should not be considered muktzah because it actually is, even in New York City, raw meat is considered something that is, that is servable even in the best restaurants, and it is served in the best restaurants. So that's kind of also what I'm relying on. So you're not so backwards as you pretended to be.
Only 2 years old.
Was there a difference on one of these tables?
Yeah, let's say it's titled. This is a butcher's knife. Butcher's knife. Shoychit's knife. No, because a shoychit's knife, it is only used for shechting, and you can't shecht on Shabbos, so it's muktzah. The big shiloh, the big bombshell here is that Rashi is telling us that something which is a kli shemalachtoi leheter can still be muktzah machmas kasvein kis. The other examples that we've encountered so far are all kelim shemalachton leiser. Right? And so it's very easy to understand why a kli shemalachtoi leiser is muktzah machmas kasvein kis. You only use it for this purpose. This purpose cannot be done on Shabbos, right? Therefore, right, it's muktzah. You're not going to use it for anything on Shabbos. But if a kli shemalachtoi leheter can be muktzah machmas kasvein kis, then we shouldn't be allowed to move glasses on Shabbos, right? Because glasses are, we're makpid on them, right? They have a makayim, a miyuchad, right? Even those, who don't have a glasses, it's either on your nose, right? Or it's, on your nightstand, right? I don't think that or they're in a case, right? Someplace safe. For most people, glasses, that would be muktzah machmas chesed and kis. So, if Rashi is correct, then something which is mutter or a cleaver, right, is muktzah machmas chesed and kis, even though it's a kli shemalachtoi leheter, so then my suit should be muktzah machmas chesed and kis. I shouldn't be allowed to move it on Shabbos because I'm machpid about it. I wouldn't use it, to stuff, a Purim, scarecrow, and I wouldn't use it as a rag, and I can't think of anything really that I would use my suit for other than getting dressed in it because it's very, very delicate, and I wouldn't want it to get out of shape or anything to happen to it. It has a makam yochad. I'm either wearing it, right, or else it's folded up, hung up, nicely. Okay, that much I won't say, right, but, it's, at the very least, I'm makpid on it, and, that's why it's got so many wrinkles. Right, but I am makpid on it, so why is it not muktzah machmas chesed kis? And so I think that it's just something which is logical, which is intuitive, right, that something which is a kli shemalachtoi leheter cannot be a muktzah machmas chesed kis. But the problem is then, so what's Rashi doing with his butcher cleaver? Right, it's a kli shemalachtoi leheter. Why is it muktzah machmas chesed kis? And moreover, right, there's another problem, which is a psak that the Ramah gives. The Ramah says that, let's say that a person is a merchant and he has inventory. So he has a houseware, store, right, or some other sort of store in his basement, right, a shoe store, whatever it is. And, Shabbos comes and the little kid can't find her shoes. So you know what? They'll just open up a pair in the basement, whatever it is. And they'll wear that, you get it at cost anyhow, right? So, any problem? Yeah, the Ramah says that's not allowed. Because all inventory, excluding food, but all inventory that's non-food is considered to be muktzah on Shabbos, muktzah machmas chesron kis. So again, shoes are kli shemalachtoi leheter. And housewares usually are kelim shemalachtoi leheter. If it's a kli shemalachtoi leheter, how can it be muktzah by machmas chesron kis? So these are the challenges, the sakina dashtavta according to Rashi, right, and the inventory on the kelim ha'oimdim l'schayra, which are muktzah machmas chesron kis. Yes? A torn shoelace. So the part of it which is the part of it which is unusable is for sure muktzah. The part which is still usable is
short,
if both parts of it are too short, so then the entire thing is muktzah. So you probably can't. I think it happened to me one time, and I just wore my weekday shoes the rest of Shabbos.
I always can't Shabbos morning.
Okay, so the lesson in Muktzah is, right, is change your shoelaces on Erev Shabbos.
We'll get very long shoelaces. It's more sticky than that. There's enough left there. The first laces, they fit.
They're slip-ons.
Why wouldn't it be too much for the slip-ons? Because everyone else is not. A regular person using a cleaver to cut meat, he's not concerned. But the butcher, that's what he uses for his business.
Anytime you have something muksa machmas chesser and kiss, you can un chesser and kiss it, right? By just using it during the week for something other than its intended purpose.
The butcher won't do that.
Okay, so we're talking about a butcher's butcher knife, and not the butcher's grandson, right? Who inherited the butcher knife. We're talking about the butcher's butcher knife. No, so this is a basic issue. So again, Tosos we have, right, he says it's a shoychid knife. Rashi says that it's a butcher knife. The Sefer Mishnah HaShabbos says, one second, the butcher knife is klisha malachai lahetar. It should be like your glasses, it should be like your suit, right, which are for sure allowed, right, to be moved on Shabbos. They're not muktzah because they're klisha malachai lahetar. So the butcher knife also is a klisha malachai lahetar. You should be allowed to move it. So, Poskim actually write this, that a klisha malachta lahetar cannot be a muktzah machmas chesser and kiss. So based on this, how can we answer? I don't know what I meant by that. Meaning the butcher.
The inventory.
Okay, so that's the classical answer, which is for question 64. That's the answer, right? Which is that okay? Maybe the inventory, just the person is totally misiach das from right on Shabbos, and they you ask them during the week, do you anticipate using shoes ever right on Shabbos from your inventory? They say, of course not. Right? They don't foresee any use for the inventory on Shabbos. That might be an answer. Question 58, I have no clue what I meant, so let's just skip that for a second. 59, the Ramah gives a case where klisha malach lehetar is muktzah machmas chesser and kiss. Right? What's his case? That's inventory, right? Merchandise. How does that contradict the poskim? Well, the poskim say it's a klisha malach lehetar, so it can't be aser. And then the Ramah says this klisha malach lehetar, the shoes, right, the silverware, it is aser. So the Tehillah L'David, right, cited in Mishnah HaShabbos, said something which I have thought for many years, but I've never seen it inside. And then the Mishnah HaShabbos quoted it, paraphrased it in the name of the Tehillah L'David. I'm not sure whether the Tehillah L'David actually says it himself, or whether the Mishnah HaShabbos is reading it into his words. I don't actually have a Tehillah L'David at home, and I have not had access to one, right, since I prepared this. But he says something which I think is very, very beautiful. He says that perhaps a klisha malachta lehetar, which a person is makpid about, right, and is different from an ordinary klisha malachta lehetar. And the difference is that an ordinary klisha malachta lehetar may be moved letzayrech gufoy, letzayrech mekoymoy, and mechama letzel. Right, it can be moved, right, to use it, right, to clear its place, right, it can be used to protect it, right, from harm, from damage, etc. However, perhaps a kli shemalach te leheter, which is muktza machmas chesru and kis, can only be used for its designated purpose. That's the Tehillah L'David. You can only move it or use it, right, for its designated purpose. So how would this solve the issue? Right, so on the one hand, you'd say it still is mukta machmas chesser and kiss, the sakina de ashkavta, right? You can use it for cutting, but maybe you can't use it for other things. You can't move it mechama letzel, right? If it's in danger of getting damaged, you might not be allowed to move it. You might not be allowed to use it for cutting things other than meat. You can only use it on Shabbos for its intended purpose. So that would solve the cutting board. What about the inventory, the merchandise? Well, the intended purpose, right, of merchandise is for sale. So on Shabbos, you would be allowed to move it, right, to sell, which obviously is not allowed. But for other uses, that's not the intended purpose of this inventory. Maybe when it's purchased, it'll get a new intended purpose. But as long as it's on my shelves or in my storeroom, its intended purpose is to sell to somebody. And since I can't move it for that purpose on Shabbos, then maybe I can't move it for anything on Shabbos. So that's the Tehillah LeDavid. Now, if the Tehillah LeDavid is correct, and I don't believe that Poskim accept this, even though it's very, very elegant and very easy to apply, but according to the Tehillah LeDavid, let's just think for a second, would you be allowed to take the serving plate, which is on display in your break front, and use it to serve the main dish to your guest?
I doubt it. Yeah. It's a serving dish.
It's the intended purpose of it.
Only on a special occasion. And it's extremely expensive.
It's only for showcase.
Exactly. That's
right. It's a
trophy. It's in your break front. As
it's for showcase.
Exactly. It's not really for you.
Right. So this is the basic issue. What is the intended purpose of the dishes in your break front? Is their intended purpose for show as ornaments and adornments and decorations for your house? Right? Or do they retain their utilitarian purpose, right? And it just happens to be because they're pretty, right? That you leave them in the break front, to. Right. So somebody raised earlier, the question about the Kos Shel Eliyahu, right? So that's an interesting question. Is the purpose of the Kos Shel Eliyahu during the rest of the year? Is the purpose display? Right? Is it to decorate the house, and only on the Leil HaSeder, right? Does the purpose of that Kos Shel Eliyahu change, right, and become drinking, right? Or do we say no, that because once a year we use it for drinking, therefore it is still defined as a utensil, right, whose purpose is for drinking? So we don't. Okay, but at least for holding for holding liquid. My kids drink from the Kos Shel Eliyahu at the Seder. Yeah. Right, so the same issue, Pesach-tik dishes, right, Pesach-tik cups, everything. So during the year, you would never use them. So there, you would think it's klisha malach, mukta machmas kasson kis. Right, because you're not going to use it on Shabbos, but on the other end, it's a klisha malach tei leheter. So maybe we'll define the use of Pesach dishes, right, as the eating of Pesachic food. Right? You could have that type of a definition, or you could say no, a dish is a dish is a dish, and dishes are meant for food. So that's again, it's very, very difficult, and it's important in terms of understanding this Tehillah LeDavid and applying it properly. Right now, we need to properly define the purpose, right, of everything that's in our house, which is a very exciting and interesting undertaking. Right now, like what is the purpose, right, of all the things in my drawers and all the things in my break front? And I think actually that it gives us a lot more insight, right, into why our houses are so cluttered up, right? You can go home and say like, oh, let's see, what's the purpose of this? What is this again? Anyhow, so happens to me pretty frequently. So,
that's gonna be a long time.
If you move to a 7-room house or something, it's all full.
Right, so it's actually very interesting that Rav Huttner writes and is quoted again by the Art Scroll Muktzah book in the introduction, that one of the many purposes of Hilchot Muktzah, one of the many purposes that the rabbis had in mind when they made the gzeira, right, of Muktzah, was to force us to be more mindful, and especially on Shabbos. Now, mindfulness means, right, not just doing things thoughtlessly, but doing things with intentionality, asking ourselves, what are my goals, right, and how does the action I'm about to do advance and further my goals? And so, for example, the Rav Huttner says, when we have this idea that a kli shemalachtoi le'iser can be used l'tzorech gufay, right, what that means is, you're allowed to move it as long as it's going to enhance your Shabbos. So that means that before I move any kli shemalachtoi le'iser, I'm going to ask myself the question, how will moving this enhance my Shabbos? Now, just asking myself that question, right, is already a spiritually uplifting experience, and it's good training for success in life also. I think that in the book, you know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, one of the strategies that they recommend, set goals and ask yourself how your every action is going to further, right, your goals. So Rav Hunter says that's exactly the purpose, right, of Hilchos Muktzah. It forces you to understand, right, what your goals are and how, right, each of your actions and each of your assets, right, is going to further that goal, particularly as concerned klisha malach le iser and maybe klisha malach le heter as well on Shabbos. So the Tila le David, I think, just fits very, very nicely with that, you know, Varta of Rav Hunder, because he really demands that we understand all the expensive kalim, right, in our bake front, right, what is their purpose? Is it for Pesach eating, or is it for eating period? Right? Is it for display, right, or is it also for occasional use? And how does one make that determination? And that's going to make a difference. Now, according to that, right, let's say my glasses I can use for wearing on Shabbos, according to the Tehillah of David. But what about if I want to do this, right, in order to concentrate? Right, is this the intended purpose of a pair of glasses? For me, maybe it is. I haven't done it in years, right, but... So, but is the intended purpose of glasses to help me concentrate?
It's told the baby to pick it up. Another thought.
So that's already a little bit more scary. But again, I think you get, kind of get a sense. Yishma Chacham, you know, v'yosef lekach. That it's not always so easy to determine the intended purpose. Now, again, according to Tehillah David, in some ways we treat it like a muktzah machmas kasrum kis, right? That is, when it comes to things which are not its intended purpose, right, we'll say muktzah, don't move it, right, for these other purposes. But we don't treat it like kasrum kis, because for its intended purpose, right, you are allowed to use the klisha malach le iser. Based on this, how can we resolve the contradiction? Again, the poskim are talking about using klisha malach le heter for their intended purposes. The Ramah, right, talks about the kalim in the store, their inventory. He says the intended purpose is sale, and you can't do that on Shabbos. However, this is not the consensus of poskim, but I happen to have found in Tehillah David, I happen to think it's very elegant, I happen to think that it's very, very easy to apply. The solution which actually appears in poskim, it's Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and it's quoted in many of the contemporary Sfarim, is not so easy to apply, nor is it as elegant, right? But it does seem to be the consensus of poskim nowadays, and that's what Mr. Petrushka said before. And that is, he says, there are certain things that, like, you never in a million years would think of using on Shabbos, even though they're klisha malach le heter. And there's other things that never in a thousand years you would think of using on Shabbos, right? So the ones that you would never use even in a million years, those, even though they're malach le heter, are still muktzah machmas chesron kis. That explains the inventory. That explains the sakina d'ashkapta. Maybe it's in his store, right, or whatever, for whatever reason it is. It's a commercial, a commercial knife, and you know, he just never in a million years would use it on Shabbos. On the other hand, when the poskim say that your glasses and your suit are not muktzah, that's because you do intend to use the glasses and the suit on Shabbos. And the basic idea is you have to ask yourself, and honestly ask yourself, right, to what extent would I possibly foresee my need to use this on Shabbos? Theoretically, right, if you have a shoe store owner that has, that's got a lot of kids who are always losing their shoes, right, so then maybe their inventory would not be muktzah on Shabbos, because this is a person who does foresee a possible need to go into their inventory on Shabbos. Again, in my house, we have a picture that constantly falls off the wall, right? So we were talking last week about, is it muktzah machmas chesron kis on account of the yichud makom, right? But I would say, since the kids constantly knock it off the wall, right, therefore I do foresee the need to move it on Shabbos. And hence, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I'd be comfortable saying it for sure is not muktzah machmas chesron kis, because I foresee the need to use it on Shabbos. Tehillah le David would be machmir. Right, what would Tehillah le David say about moving that picture? Okay, give me the picture first, and we'll come back to that. So, I'm not even sure. I don't have access to a Tehillah le David to check out even the biographical information. But he is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch that is cited by many of the poskim in Hilchos Muktzah. Yeah, the intended purpose of the picture is decoration. So I could theoretically move it in order to decorate my house more nicely, right? But just to, well, I guess if it's off the wall, it's not so aesthetically pleasing if it's on the floor or on the couch. So maybe I could move it in order to make my house more beautiful. Maybe the Tfilah Dovid would accede to that type of an argument, right? Where it is now, it's not really beautifying my house. If I put it back on the wall, right, so then it is beautifying my house. So perhaps he would accede to that argument, because by putting it back on the wall, you are helping it fulfill its intended purpose and enhance your Shabbos. Okay, so I'm sure it was done in consultation with with the Rabbanim, and as you said, Hilchos Muktzah, right, is constantly changing. It changes from person to person, certainly, right, from historical era to historical era, from city to city, culture to culture, right? It all varies because it all depends on how people view, what people anticipate, how they use their property. And so it's not would not be surprising, right, if this ruling of the Ramah that inventory is categorically muktzah, perhaps since the times of the Ramah, some things perhaps have changed about it. Usually we're much more cautious, right, about saying, oh, something changed, if it is explicit, right, black on white, right, in the Shulchan Aruch, right, and Ramah, and and unanimous, right? So then usually we'll be much more hesitant about saying that it changed, as opposed to something which is subject to a machlokas, or perhaps less clear, or comes in a later source, right, than the Shulchan Aruch. We tend to be a little bit more makel about those things. But even something that's written in the Ramah, right, theoretically, right, if we observe a widespread change in the habits of people, so then we certainly would say that the Ramah was writing in his time, right, and in our time this has perhaps changed. And so I guess that the question would be, with what frequency does this happen? And how much does one actually anticipate it? And maybe the first time it was unanticipated, right? But then, after Shal Shudis, so the merchant said, oh, it was such a pity that we all had to eat the gefilte fish with our hands. Next time this happens, so you're welcome to come to me and I'll unlock my store. And that already may be like a designation, right, where you take something which is Mukta Machmas Chesrum Kis, and you designate it, and you say, okay, this is no longer Mukta Machmas Chesrum Kis, I'm happy to use it for things other than its purpose. And so that might be what's happening with the that doesn't seem likely to me. I think it sounds
on his element. Did you Google it?
Yeah. It comes out of the Rishon Lezion. And many people use that name for the Zalman.
Well, we can check.
No.
In the front of the Mishnah Berurah, there's a list of Svarim that he quotes. So if Tehillah Adav is on the list, then it would indicate that it's a much older Sefer. But it is not on the list.
No, it was born 1910. Rabbi David Ortinger.
That's in Tehillah Adav? Okay.
Ayur Chol Shabbat.
1910. That is David Ortenberg. Excellent.
What? You have written on. It might still be around.
It would be
109.
Yeah.
Would that be considered Yichud Bakum? Probably.
It doesn't count.
Probably. Yichud Bakum means that, like, I want it to be in its place. Doesn't mean that it stays in its place. Okay, so let's just have a quick introduction to the next Gemara that we're going to read. As you can see, we're going to depart a little bit from the standard format, and tomorrow we're going to start off by reading a Rambam. I would recommend everybody to read the Rambam on their own overnight. Questions 65 through 69. You can basically do all of those based on the Rambam, and I am not going to answer those questions for you. But the basic issue that we're going to talk about tomorrow is, what is the range of purposes for Muktzah, for the Gzeira of Muktzah? We already encountered the Chayei Adam, right, who said it's to force us to prepare before Shabbos, so that Shabbos can be the time of enjoying the fruits of our labor, by Misha Tarach Be'erav Shabbos, Yochal B'Shabbos. So the idea is, plan what you're going to use before Shabbos, and then use on Shabbos. Don't use Shabbos for planning. Right, that was the Chayei Adam. Today, right, we saw Rav Hutner's Vart, right, that it's to force us to be more mindful. Before you move any Kli Shemalach B'L'Isser, you need to ask yourself, how is this movement, how is this action going to enhance my enjoyment of Shabbos? And sometimes that applies even for Kli Shemalachtoi, right, Leheter, and for other things. There are a number of other reasons that are given. I believe that we've encountered at least one other reason somewhere earlier in the Gemara. Was it the Gzeira Shema Yiska? Right? The concern that if you move around, let's say the chair leg, right, the broken chair leg or the broken chair, right? So perhaps you'll end up fixing them and being over the malacha of Bone or of Makkah B'Patish. And so there are definitely some forms of Muktzah that were nigzar in order to prevent us from accidentally transgressing malacha. Maybe that can be expanded. Maybe we'll say that that there are other forms of Muktzah. Klisha Malach Le'Isser. You can never move a Klisha Malach Le'Isser for no reason, because if you do, right, then you might end up doing malacha. Possibility. So we're going to see in the Rambam actually gives a number of other interesting reasons for how the observance of Hilchos Muktzah, right, enhances our Shabbos. And he starts off, I'll just point this out to you because I think that it's really something which I never would have noticed before I became a high school rabbi. And now it's sort of like, expands to almost like fill up, like a large portion of why this Rambam is so important from a chinuch perspective. The Rambam says, and this is the first question over here, the Rambam acknowledges that Shabbos can sometimes be boring.
Boring?
Boring. And he says that Hilchos Muktzah is designed so that the boredom, right, should not lead us, right, to a violation of the spirit of Shabbos. Which is a very, very interesting thesis. He acknowledges, right, that we can't do a lot of the ordinary recreational, right, and social or whatever activities, right, that we do during the week. We can't do them on Shabbos. And therefore, right, many people will be at a loss, right, for how to spend their Shabbos. And what does a person do, right, when they're at a loss? Maybe they start acting, mindlessly, right? What does boredom, right, drives a person to distraction? There's all sorts of, expressions about it. And, there's concern, the Rambam says, the Chachamim were good psychologists, and they understood, right, that Hilchos Shabbos, as they're meant to be lived, might be, beyond the access, right? At least, the highest ideals of Hilchos Shabbos are beyond the access, right, of, younger people or ordinary people or whatever it is. And so they understood that, Shabbos can go in two different paths. And perhaps, Muktzah is sort of the guard, right, to prevent us from taking our Shabbos, right, down the wrong path, and maybe is meant to give us some guidance even about how to cope with the boredom on Shabbos and how to turn it, right, in order to make ourselves into more spiritual people and engage, right, in more spiritual pursuits. So that's the upcoming attractions, Amir Tashem, for tomorrow. And please do take a look at the Rambam overnight if your schedule permits it. With the solution.